Good afternoon. Welcome to the last speaker, but certainly not the least. My name is Deanna Bird, and I'm a second-year doctoral student at the UCLA School of Public Health. The work that I'm presenting to you today, Campus Life and Mental Health, is actually the work that I've been working on for the past year. I'm just going to quickly say that I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. I didn't actually put that in the presentation because, as you see, the other three presenters already did that. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the things that I'm going to cover today, which is quite a bit. So I'm going to just start briefly with a little bit of background, move into my methodology, my findings, and then obviously talk about some recommendations, making some conclusions, and then my next steps. Most of you are probably fully aware of the mental health landscape of college students. It's receiving national attention. However, it's sort of receiving the attention that's been somewhat negative. As you see, we've had campus shootings, and students have lashed out and then in the end taken their life. And that's not really the focus of my presentation today. I actually want to identify ways that hopefully will lead to better positive and more positive mental health for college students, not sort of this negative aspect that we've sort of seen televised in most recent years. And when we think about colleges and universities across the nations, really what we're seeing is that they're reporting unprecedented numbers of students in psychological distress. Actually, nearly half of all college students report feeling so depressed that they have trouble functioning. Research further shows that depressed students are more likely to miss classes. They're also then likely to experience a decline in their GPA, nearly a half a point on a 4.0 scale, which is obviously significant if you're a student trying to get into maybe a graduate level program or continue your education. What we're also seeing is that there's been a nationwide increase in the number of students seeking counseling. To give you some very specific examples, MIT actually reported a 50% increase between 1995 and 2000. Columbia reported a 40% increase since 1995. So across the board, we're seeing more students not only with increased demand, but they're also having more severe psychological problems. So not just that they're also seeking services, but once they come in, they're actually having more severe psychological issues that they're dealing with. And then with that, what we're seeing then is in the past 20 years, we've seen an increase in the number of students on medication, mostly for depression and those type of disorders. And it's not surprising then that Prozac is the number one prescribed drug for college students. When we look specifically at the University of California and their campuses, basically what we see is their trends resemble national ones. And those trends are having a very much so a negative impact on the students. In other words, what we're seeing, and when we think about the amount of students that are coming in, we're seeing not only them being an increase for psychiatric services and psychological issues, but also at the time that they're coming in and seeking counseling, these students are already taking some sort of medication. 1 in 4 are actually taking some sort of medication when they're coming in and seeking counseling. So the students are also being they're heavily medicated. Just to show you this graphically, this is from 8 UC campuses. I want to emphasize that. It's 5 years worth of data. As you can see, at every year, there has been an increase in the number of individual students seeking mental health services. What basically did the Mental Health Committee conclude for the University of California was, in essence, that the university students are presenting more complex and dealing with greater issues. What is this translating into? Students are having longer wait times. Some of them are waiting 3 to 6 weeks before they see a counselor or a psychiatrist. They're also having difficulty retaining staff because of the overtaxed mental health system. It's basically not being able to meet the needs of students. And then what does that have an effect on the learning environment overall? Not just the students, but also the faculty. When you think about my theoretical framework, and as a previous speaker mentioned, it is an ecological model that I'm using. And really what I'm focusing on is trying to understand the relationships between not only environmental and individual, not only individual level, but also environmental level factors. So the ecological perspective looks at the combination of those factors, how they affect behavior. More importantly, I'm focusing on how they affect mental health. To kind of show you this graphically, this is each of the levels. If I had an individual, they would be placed right here. The ontogenetic, those are developmental characteristics, so those are individual level, thinking like your psychological issues, genetic, and even your historical background, those are the individual level, and that's where that person will be placed. When you move out to the next level, that would be the microsystem. So those are our face-to-face or our interpersonal interactions with other people. Predominantly, you think of your family or your friends. And the exosystem moving out next would be considering things that are social structures that have an indirect effect on the individual. And then the outermost layer is the macrosystem. And that's very broad, looking at cultural beliefs and cultural norms. For this study, I really focused on those first two layers, which is the ontogenetic and the microsystem, again, looking at the individual and then their most immediate environment. I really wanted to think about broadening the perspective of mental health beyond just considering individual level factors, and thus that's why I applied the ecological model to this problem of college mental health. This was my research question. I wanted to basically, as I said before, understand how both these two factors affect the mental health of UCLA college students. I used data from the 2006 Student Development Survey. This survey is actually administered every 3 to 5 years, and the survey that it was an existing data source, was in 2006. Its main purpose really is to capture a snapshot of the UCLA population to understand student behaviors and their attitudes about certain things. But more importantly, it examines and explores the connections between health, student wellness, student development, and the college environment on student success. That's the central purpose of this survey. It is really designed as an omnibus tool, so it's a very comprehensive survey that covers multiple topics, ranging all the way from students' alcohol use, drug use, sexual activity, and then, of course, looking at student issues such as mental health, stress, et cetera, et cetera. The 2006 survey was actually administered online, so an email solicitation was actually sent to all of UCLA college students, those that did not have a privacy restrictions on their email account, and we had about 2,200 students that responded to that survey. I just want to emphasize that there is a statistically significant difference between our survey or our population and the UCLA population during the 2005-2006 academic year. Our sample slightly overrepresented women, Asian American students, and undergraduates. And 27% of the students reported that they were foreign-born, and 34% reported that English was not their first language. So as you can see, that we have a large immigrant population in this sample. For my outcome, I looked at an overall mental health measure. This was an index that was developed by RAND during the medical outcome study that they used. This study actually was done back in the 1990s, but it was an extensively tested measure, and it looked at the various aspects of psychological distress and well-being. And so it was basically 17 individual items that were comprised into an overall mental health score. For my independent variables, I had several, actually. Of course, I had some demographic and enrollment sort of information, and then I had 20 individual items from the two sections of the survey entitled Involvement in Campus Life Activities and then looking at alcohol and drug use. So taking individual items from that section, and then 6 composite variables that came specifically from the Campus Life section of the 2006 Student Development Survey. How did I develop the composite variables? I basically used a principal component analysis. What I did was I used face validity and expert opinion to qualitatively group all of the items in the campus life section, and I grouped those into 7 congruent categories. After grouping those items, I then interpreted the results of my principal components analysis. We arbitrarily chose a cutoff point of 0.3, and then we then conducted a item and reliability analysis to determine which of the items in the campus life sections to include in the composite variables. We basically labeled the variables, our composite measures, just based upon the commonality among the items, not necessarily that the labels that we applied to the composite variables were to represent an underlying construct or an underlying latent variable. It was simply because of how the items were related to each other, and that was what determined the label that we applied, and then looking at the reliability, which ones we then included in our composite measures. So here they are. Intergroup awareness, academic self-confidence, confidence in communicating, strong spiritual identity, suicidal tendencies, and then institutional satisfaction were the six composite variables that I created. For my stepwise regression, which is the methodological approach that I took for this study, I basically used an input, environment, and outcomes model. This model basically determined my regression blocks for entering in each of the variables into my regression equation. My input variables were obviously my environmental or my demographic characteristics, and then my environmental variables were looking at all those campus life variables, so those composite, the six composite variables that I created, and then all the other individual items that I had taken from the survey. And then obviously my outcome was an overall mental health index that I had adopted from RAND. So block one consisted simply of the demographics, and then block two consisted of the campus life variables. What did I find? Basically, my regression model explained 57% of the variation in mental health. 20 of those variables entered the regression equation, and of those, what I found was that 14 were directly related to positive mental health, and only 6 were inversely related to positive mental health. Here are the 6 variables that were the strongest predictors or contributors of positive mental health. I'm just going to highlight quickly that the first one, I see myself as part of the campus community, that represented an environmental level variable, and then as you can see, the other 5 really looked at individual level characteristics, my coping skills, the balancing the demands in my life, those were all individual level indicators. What were some of the strengths of this study? I think most importantly that I did have a reliable mental health measure. As I said before, RAND had intensively tested this measure. It had a Kronbach alpha of 0.91, and we also had reliable composite measures. Even those 6 variables that I had created, none of the alphas were less than 0.75. I also think that we had a quite a large sample size, and even though obviously there's nearly 30 or 40,000 students at UCLA, still having 2,200 in our survey was great. Some of the limitations, as with any study, our main issue was that our server crashed to some degree. We had a new program, I guess, that they had in 2006 that they were trying to implement, and it really translated into slow load times for each page. And so basically students, I think, at some points just gave up, didn't want to complete some of the survey, and I think that had an effect on our response rate of 7.1%. Also, the students that I said before, only the students that did not have an email restriction were sent a solicitation to participate in the survey. So, of course, we maybe did not include all the students, but there was advertisement throughout the campus, and hopefully students saw those. Most importantly, this was a one-time point data, so this is cross-sectional. It's therefore difficult for us to assess causality. We don't know if students came in with mental health issues before they went to college, or was it the college environment that then had the effect on them and they then developed the mental health issues. Some quick conclusions. I think looking just at the individual level, most importantly, as I've said before, strong coping skills and ability to respond to stress, things of those nature are really what's related to positive mental health. Some other things that were related to just the looking at the strong coping skills, students who said that they had a strong spiritual identity, students who said that they had academic self-confidence, those variables were also related to a student feeling like they had great coping skills. And then, of course, suicidal thoughts or tendencies, well, those were negatively related to mental health. Emotional distress, out of all the variables of the 20 that entered in the regression equation, was the strongest contributor to positive mental health. When we're looking at this, just thinking first again at the individual level, so students who said, I'm unable to cope with the changes in my life, that they lack communication skills when talking to others or informing others of their needs. And then looking at the environmental level, students who had been singled out because of their race or ethnicity or their gender, and then students, again, who did not see themselves as part of the campus community, those were all potential sources of emotional distress for students at the environmental level. Some quick recommendations. Of course, I think that we need to develop approaches that not only teach students better coping skills, but healthy strategies for relieving stress and basically how to adjust to the academic demands of college. I think that when we consider opportunities and ways to get students integrated into the campus environment, making students feel like that they are part of that environment is really important, especially those students who say that they've been singled out and do not feel like they're part of the campus environment. I also think it's important that we explore what does it mean to be healthy on a college environment. I think that we think college students are young and they're healthy and they're active and that they don't really deal with psychological issues. What we're seeing is that that's simply not true. They are. And developing comprehensive approaches that really address the complex needs. As I said previously, students are not only presenting with greater frequency, but they're also presenting with more severe psychological issues. So that's really important. And the take-home message then, if you don't remember anything else I say today, of course, that would be to offer students services beyond just individual level counseling and individual level services. Some quick next steps. I hope to not only do some more longitudinal data collection, but I want to actually analyze the other five RAND scales. Again, I use just the overall mental health index that was developed by RAND. They have five other ones, psychological distress, anxiety, depression, and I want to basically understand whether or not there are different predictors or contributors to positive or worse mental health, looking at just these indicators, these specific indicators of mental health. Here are my references, which are quite long, and I thank you for your time.
That has been outstanding. In spite of the rocky start, I think we've done marvelous time-wise, don't you? We have 15 minutes left in this session, and like I said at the outset, I would like now to open the floor up for any questions you have of any of our presenters, and then I would like the last 5 minutes, please, to present the various awards to our students before the time's up. So let's open up the floor for questions you may have. Yes, sir.
I have two questions for the last presenter.
Deanna Bird?
One is, did you put any kind of identifier as it may be on the responses so that if you get another cross-sectional one later on, somebody might be able to use that identifier or password or something?
Yeah, I actually, when I was saying I qualitatively grouped all the items in that campus life section to create my composite variables, I actually did an Excel spreadsheet where I tried to go through and label each question within even like the variable name through the data set so I could go back later on and say, oh, this is this specific item I grouped in this and this was why I did it. So I sort of tried to keep a very meticulous, I guess, note-taking session in order to, because it was so many items in that campus life section.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't make it, but an identifier of the so that if you did another cross-sectional one later on, like what's the last four digits of your telephone number reverse?
Yeah.
Would you be able to get the longitudinal data subsample of the responders?
Yeah, actually the demographic, most of the demographic and registration information came from the registrar's office. So yes, students were basically identified by their student ID number when they were taking the survey, because that's actually how they had to even log in to get access to the survey. So there is a potential way to, you know, not only look at the individual students who did it, but then to link them, you know, to future studies, I guess I would say.
So did you guarantee their confidentiality in any way, or what? For example, what if someone responded in a very high risk manner, saying that they were suicidal and mm-hmm. all that?
So again, this survey was not a diagnostic tool. So yeah, students were made very aware that if they reported that they were experiencing suicidal thoughts or they were experiencing more depression, that we were not gonna, you know, try to intervene and report them or anything like that. This was really for us to get a quick picture of the student population and what their needs were, and not necessarily to diagnose students and then to try to treat students. So wasn't really the purpose of the survey.
Okay.